A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Valiant Sunday episode, and today we're going to be talking about the last couple issues of Shadow Man.
If you've been listening to the New Comics Wednesdays, I've talked about them briefly, I haven't gone in depth, but if you've been listening to the podcast, you know, I think this is a great direction to take Shadow Man, and I'm really pleased with where it's going. So I have Jesse joining me today, so thanks for joining, Jesse.
Always a pleasure to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to get your initial thoughts on, because I think the last issue of Shadow Man we talked about was issue 4, where Jack went back in time. He was in Harlem in like late 20s, early 30s. So we've had three issues come out since then, and we really now have a sense of what Diggle was doing to kind of fix what had previously been done with the character and kind of give us an idea of his direction going forward. So what are your kind of initial impressions now that we've kind of put the first arc out of the way?
Well, I've been very impressed with the series so far. I'll be honest with you. I think the artist choices have been very strong with Doug Braithwaite and I guess it's what Renato Guidez or Fuentes. I can't pronounce it, but they're very, very strong artwork. Phenomenal for the medium and storytelling aspect. Andy's writing is great. I would compare this in a lot of ways to a mythical version of Ninja K, where they're going back and telling independent standalone stories, origin stories for each inception of the character at different time periods. And it's very entertaining. Almost anybody can just go into the store, pick up an issue and read it. And even without much background on the character or the mythos itself, be able to follow it and be entertained. I think that the last four issues in particular have been astoundingly good. And I would highly encourage anybody to read them, not just because I'm saying so, but because it's really good stuff. And not every issue of Shadow Man has been good. The new series has been better than in many respects than previous versions, I would say. But these last four issues have been really, really good.
Yeah, and as I said, we saw Jack falling through time with what happened at the end of issue three. And then issue four, you know, he discovered that he was kind of a passenger, if you will, maybe an observer who couldn't influence any action, who was just kind of along for the ride. But he saw one of his ancestors, I guess you'd say, great-great-grandfather, I believe it was, who was bound to the Loa and had the ability to become Shadow Man. But it was such a different experience than what he had. And at the time, I speculated, well, maybe this is a way for Jack to learn how to control the Loa and maybe get rid of some of that anger that he's had and not feel like he's trapped. He's has a basically a life sentence of misery while he's fighting with this Loa. And what's interesting is that Diggle basically devoted a whole issue to that idea. He didn't rush it. It could have been done in a few pages. It could have been just one story, one issue where Jack was falling through time and saw the way one of his, you know, previous ancestors had controlled the Loa, or his experience with being bound to the Loa. And then, you know, the next page, it could have been another previous bearer of the Loa, and so on and so on. And it could have been done in a series of, you know, a few pages over one issue. Instead, Diggle took his time and he really kind of dove into these characters. And we see that in issue five as well, because once Jack kind of has an idea of what happened in the 30s or 40s with his great-grandfather, saw that he was able to have a much different relationship with the Shadow Man Loa and kind of able to control it, he found himself slipping out of, I think Max was his name, and falling back through time once again. And that's where issue five starts. And we actually see him again as kind of an observer, somebody who's just along for the ride, no ability to affect action or outcome of what's going on. But he actually falls back to what we know as the first bearer of the Loa in Jack's bloodline. At least that's what we were initially told back when the series first started. Marius Boniface, who was bound to the Loa by Sandria Dark and helped Sandria kind of escape from her brother's thrall, if you will, or control, Master Dark, Nico. And we see that many years have passed since that happened. And in issue five, we meet Marius, and he's trying to live a peaceful existence. It's a summer of 1875. It looks like he's out west somewhere. He's trying to
farm some land. It doesn't look like the best farmland, to be honest with you. It looks pretty arid and desolate. And he's approached by some, I guess you'd say, marauders or outriders who are looking for somebody who's escaped from their custody, basically. They apparently took over a town and forced all the inhabitants there, a lot of them being African-American, to work a mine. And one of them escaped, had heard that Marius was close by, was there in his own homestead, living alone. And they'd also heard rumors that Marius had this ability, this Shadow Man ability, and thought perhaps he might be willing to help them. Marius really is just trying to live in peace and doesn't want anything to do with this town and these people who are unjustly forced to work in this mine. That is until he sees the mark. This man says that he's branded by these people. And when he shows the mark, when he shows the brand, it's the mark of Master Dark, of the Darks. Those two triangles with the flat long ends of the triangle against each other with two dots in the middle. And this interests Marius, right? Because he was in love with Sandria Dark and felt cast aside, didn't understand what exactly happened. So this does motivate him to help, or at least to go and investigate. So he does go and investigate what's going on. He actually sees Sandria in a kind of, doesn't see her physically, but she's kind of in a shadow form, an astral projection. And she basically tells him that, "I just used you, you know, I bound you to the Shadow Man Loa. And I see that you have another shadow right now, a shadow named Jack, who's a lost soul falling through time. How curious." And she senses Baron Samedi's hand in that and wonders what game he's playing. But she says, "Oh, you know, Marius, my poor sweet darling, I no longer had need of you. You know, I bound you to the Shadow Loa so you could protect me. You did that. And, you know, someday I may have needed you again, but I don't, right? And the duty has gone beyond you. And someday I may call on one of your descendants for help against Nico. But for now, I release you from your service." And this really breaks Marius. He's like, "Your service? You know, I loved you. You took our own son's life to turn me into this monster, and you never even asked me what I wanted." And he's just kneeling in the dirt there, and Sandria just dismisses him. So her human servants here basically shoot Marius in the back of the head, dig a grave. But that night, Marius rises again, takes his revenge, ends up freeing the townspeople. And again, Jack is an observer of all of this. He sees that even though Marius was the first, he also seems to have more control over the Loa than Jack has ever had. But what's interesting is that when Marius rises from the grave that night, and there are all these townspeople that are, you know, imprisoned, one of them who is somewhat of a voodoo priestess, maybe from the old country. She's old enough to remember when she was still back there. She gives the Loa a name, which I don't think, and Jesse can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we'd ever seen the Loa's name before. And in voodoo, as with a lot of magic, especially magic that has its roots in ancient cultures, if you know the name of something, that gives you power over it, right? So right away, I wondered if perhaps that would be a clue for Jack to have a little more control over the Loa by knowing the name, by being a passenger and seeing what was happening in the past. So long story short, Marius does kill all the men that were working for Sandria. And I'm kind of surprised she doesn't make an appearance here. She seems fine to let it happen. It makes you wonder if she was giving these men some level of power so they could have control over these townsfolk, but really didn't care what they did as far as forcing these townspeople to work for them. So the townspeople are rejoicing their newfound freedom. And not only that, now they have all the gold that they had mined for these marauders, if you will. And Marius has seemed to discover that now that he's no longer pining for Sandria Dark, he knows that that chapter of his life is over, basically. He's still going to be out there. He's no longer willing to just sit on the sidelines. And as the man that originally went to look for him thanks him, Mary says, you know, you're the one that I should be thanking. My head wasn't right. And now it is. And it's time to go looking. And for what? For revenge. No, not for revenge. For her. For Sandria Dark. The war is not over. In fact, it hasn't even started yet. So, again, this is somebody that he loved, but somebody that sacrificed their son without asking him, that bound him to this Loa without asking. And there may be more stories to be told in the future with Marius and Sandria, because I don't know that love for someone can survive what Sandria has done for him. And Marius all this time had been harboring hope that she did it out of some kind of desperation for survival, but she did actually love him. And that's, those hopes have been dashed, right? Like, she now knows that it was all about her. And that's why she was so willing to sacrifice her son, and really to sacrifice Marius himself, because he's in no way mortal anymore now that he's been bound with this Shadow Man Loa. So there's actually was a lot to unpack in this issue 5, not least of which is Jack learning the name of the Loa. So I thought it was a really interesting take. And again, I was really impressed and very happy to see Andy go back to some of what were the most successful issues of the first Shadow Man series for Valiant, and bring all that back in. So, yeah, I thought it was great. And the art in the issue, it was done by Doug Braithwaite. It was very, very visceral, and the colors were somewhat muted, and it really suited the story and made it feel like we were, you know, going back to the past to see a story. So I thought it was all in all a really, really great issue. And I wasn't sure what to expect after this issue either, because this supposedly was the first, right? So where does Jack have to fall back now if he falls through time? Because we get no hint of what's going to happen to him next. So what were your thoughts on this issue in particular, Jesse?
You know, I got to tell you the truth. A lot of the Shadow Man stories have actually been kind of hokey at times in the past, and you kind of looked at it and it doesn't really, I don't know, it doesn't match certain aspects of that universe the way others have. This did a very good job. This is if you were to throw this on the TV screen or in a movie theater, I believe people would want to watch it. I think that it would be entertaining. I think it would be interesting from a visual perspective and a written perspective. I was very, very excited by it. I like what Valiant's doing with this. I know a lot of people are complaining about certain aspects of the Valiant universe right now, but the fact is, what they're doing with Ninja K, what they're doing with Shadow Man, kind of what they're doing with Exo Manowar, and what they're about to do with Bloodshot, is they're adding depth to the mythos of these characters. They're building that history and timeline, and they're really expanding. These Shadow Man issues have essentially been an expanded origin story. And it's not just an expanded origin story, like, you know, hey, this is where he comes from, but it's like, you know, each one of these characters that you're reading about at various different points in time, they're very compelling characters. They're very well written. You understand their motives. You understand their emotions. You understand their actions, and that makes for good writing. I personally thought it was a phenomenal issue. I liked the way it looked. I liked the way it read. And I think it's one of the better additions to the Shadow Man mythos.
Did you give any thought to where the story might go from here, being that Marius was supposedly the first?
Well, you know, again, I don't believe anything in comics, because, you know, so much more can be written and will be. And, as Baron Samedi has alluded to many, many times over, is time
it operates different in the dead side, operates different in the afterlife than, you know, what apparently earthlings understand and whatever the case may be. So, the history of the Shadow Man Loa, well, as we already know, goes way back and probably transcends, you know, human knowledge and understanding, you know. I see that that's where the story goes. And I see that, there's more that can come of this. I mean, there could be an origin story told, you know, in another universe, another dimension, another timeline altogether. That would eventually link itself, you know, maybe 100,000 or maybe 1 million years or in the past. There's so much creative, potential here. And I'm actually very excited to see it because we need it. The Shadow Man universe, it needs it. It needs to be more cohesive and better grounded. And has lateral left and right limits so that we understand, you know, what this character, where he comes from, why he is who he is, the struggles that he has, powers that he has, and so on. And this is important because not only, you know, have we been reading Shadow Man for many years, but we also have Shadow Man in 4001 AD. You know, we have the character there. Now we're having the characters in 40s back in post-Civil War, Midwest. And as we're about to talk about, you know, soon enough, even further back.
Yeah, and I'll kind of sum up the next couple issues because they go together very closely. So moving on to issue 6, we've got Andy Diggle still handling the writing duties. Renato Guedes on art, letters by Simon Boland. And Jack continues to slip through time. But before we get there, we actually see something in the current day, which is Jack's funeral. A very, very small gathering at a crematorium, and they've come together to bid farewell to Jack. And obviously, Alyssa's there, and very few others. I think a total of, what, 2, 4, 6, 7 people. When we see some others show up who aren't necessarily welcome, I'll say that. Lionel Devereaux, bagman for the Brethren. And he says, I'm just here to pay my respects and also checking to make sure he's actually, you know, dead. And they do go, they check, and they say, well, you know, another one bites the dust, and wondering if he has any offspring, obviously worried about the Shadow Man legacy. And he mentions that the Abettor served Shadow Man, whereas the Brethren serve Dark, and now both are dead, supposedly. But, you know, as Jesse says, it's comics, so we know that's not actually true. So as they leave, the Abettors aren't pleased, I guess you'd say. And they wonder if they should cremate Jack or what they should possibly do. And they decide they'll leave him for now as Alyssa's wishes. And Alyssa wants room. And what does she want room for? She wants room to ask for help from Dr. Mirage, who shows up and says this is a long shot, right? Hoping that Jack's not really gone. Hoping that they can find Jack's spirit out there. And she has asked Dr. Mirage to come and find out what did Baron Samedi actually do, right? Like, supposedly he lured Jack back to the dead side. But why is his body still here? Previously, every time Jack went to the dead side, he literally went to the dead side. And this isn't normal. So is he really gone? Alyssa doesn't want to believe it. There's too much supernatural. There's too much history between them as you know, individuals for her to let go so easily. So Dr. Mirage asks for something personal that belonged to Jack that he may have imprinted on. And Alyssa can think of nothing better than the Shadow Scythe, right? That Jack used as Shadow Man. So once Dr. Mirage has that in her hand, she starts searching for Jack, and she actually feels him. She says, I feel him out there, but very distant. He's falling through darkness, no, through time. There's jazz music, which is a reference to his time with his great-grandfather Max. There's a smell like gun smoke, which is a reference to the issue that we just talked about, issue 5 with Marius. And then as she reaches back farther, Alyssa's saying, can you reach him? Can you pull him back? But it's too late. He's fallen again, and this time out of his own bloodline to the ancient past. before the Loa was ever bound. He's so far away. And Dr. Mirage says, I'm sorry, I've lost him. He's gone. Whether he's gone for good, who can say, right? So what we find out is that Jack has fallen through so many lives, there's nothing left for him to grab onto. And he's wondering if this is what Samedi planned on him all along, for him to just fall forever. You know, Samedi's more powerful than he's ever been. He could have literally destroyed Jack. He could have eaten Jack's soul, but he didn't. His last words were something about going to teach you a lesson. Your schooling starts now. So you do have to wonder what Samedi's motivations were, right? Because supposedly they've been enemies all this time, but he's really doing Jack a favor when you look at what happens in, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7. It's like he wants Jack to be a better Shadow Man. Why else would he send him on this journey to see successful bearers of the Loa? Because that's really what it is. It's Jack going back and seeing people who are bound to the Loa that weren't overtaken by it, that weren't filled with anger by it the way that Jack has been, who weren't basically fighting whatever enemy was in front of them while at the same time fighting the Loa. So you wonder what, I mean, Samedi's always been not a nice guy, you know, always considered to be a villain, but he does what he does for his own reasons, that's for sure. So it may be that he wants Shadow Man to be indebted to him, and he knows that Jack as Shadow Man would be much more powerful if he can tame the Loa or control the Loa or not be at odds with the Loa so much. So as Jack continues to fall back through time, he ends up in Africa in 40,000 BC, once again as a passenger in someone else's life. Obviously from an ancient tribe. I mean, these are, I think I'm not up on my ancient anthropology by any stretch of the imagination, but I think these are still the same species as us. I think they're still Homo sapiens, but yeah. they're not that far removed from some of the other ancestors, Homo erectus and this and that. And credit Renato Guedes both in issue 6 and 7 with depicting them in his artwork in such a way that you can tell that these are ancient humans. You know, they have very broad faces, very broad noses. They don't look exactly super close to what we look like now, but just different enough that it's noticeable. And I found that to be to add a little flavor to the story and help ground it in the time that it's in. So as Jack is a passenger on this ancient tribesman's journey of life, he's basically out hunting with others from his tribe. And as they're out hunting, they are attacked, and there's a lion there that attacks them. And the tribesman who Jack is basically a passenger of seems to be the most formidable of the lot. Reminds me a lot of Jack in a way. And he's able to actually slay the lion. And as he does, he feels a little overcome. Doesn't understand where this feeling comes from. And he says as much, I feel as though a ghost stepped into my heart. It's very strange. And we know this to be Jack. And Jack himself says, maybe the third time's the charm. Where am I? Who am I? Who's this dude, this standing wolf that he's along for the ride with? There's no Shadow Loa in him. So is Jack finally free of the Shadow Loa? So as the tribesmen, including Standing Wolf, gather up the antelope that they killed and head back to their tribe, they find their village in ruins and being burned. And this is something that's very strange to them. They don't have fire. So they see the fire. They believe it to be evil magic. And Standing Wolf tells the rest to stay here, goes and looks for his mother and father, wondering who did it. And we see someone from off panel say, Standing Wolf, I know your face. I took it from the memories of your loved ones when I ate their souls. So there's a sorcerer, has a black magic, and Shadow Wolf says, you sent the bad animal spirit to draw us away from the tribe, to leave them defenseless, and literally slaughtered them and ate their souls. And so this is somebody with ancient magic, and he defeats Standing Wolf and the rest of the hunting party. Doesn't kill all of them the way he did prior. In fact, he says to Standing Wolf, "You are a warrior. I will lead my men toward the place where the sun rises. If you live, follow us and you can find a place among our number, or die, I don't care." So he does recognize the fact that not everybody, he still wants to grow his tribe. He's not going to kill everybody that he comes across. And so the next day, Standing Wolf is alive, and one of the hunting party who managed to survive as well helps him to his feet and says, "We must flee before the soul taker returns." And Standing Wolf says, "We must go north." And the other hunter says, "The tribe is gone. My family's destroyed. I'll go back to the Great Spirit, see my family again. I just need to get away from this place and get out into the wild and hunt and live." Standing Wolf rather is not willing to do that. He says, "No, I won't flee like a frightened hare. I'm going north to the mountain to find the Keeper of the Dead, and I will make her give me strong magic, and then I will find the Soul Taker, and I'll have my revenge." And the other hunter, it's Slow Hippo actually is his name, because he's a little chunky, let's say. He's very frightened by that aspect. He's like, "No, the mountain is taboo. It's forbidden. You can't go there. Keeper of the Dead dwells in darkness, and it's right to fear the darkness." But Standing Wolf's not to be deterred. He says, "Fear's not my master, and evil men fear the dark, but I'll take this bright magic." He's referring to the fire. He says, "Now it's mine, and I will use it to find a way through the darkness." So he heads to the mountain. He finds the Keeper of the Dead, or goes into the cave where the Keeper of the Dead supposedly is. And as he heads in, he sees the image of the Shadow Man, the one that we know, the figure in the doorway. And meanwhile, remember, Jack is a passenger on this journey, and he believes he's fallen so far back through time, it's before the Loa, so you can imagine what his thoughts are when he sees this Shadow Man symbol. He says, "I thought I'd fallen too far. I thought this was where my story ends, but I was wrong. This is where it begins," right? Because he's a passenger along for the ride with Standing Wolf. Jack no longer senses the Shadow Man Loa within him, and doesn't sense it in Standing Wolf either. But clearly seeing this symbol on the cave wall in the place where the Keeper of the Dead lives means that this is where it all starts. So again, when issue 5 ended, I had no idea where Diggle was going to go. You know, supposedly this was the first of Jack Boniface's ancestors who had the Loa, and going back to 40,000 BC Africa wasn't what I expected. I wasn't sure I would necessarily like it. I was like, "Oh, so is this, come to find out, some ancient ancestor of Jack, and somehow it has to do with him becoming Shadow Man in some way?" I mean, this isn't a typical story that would interest me. I don't really have that much interest in this kind of ancient culture stuff or whatever. But it was so well written, and it's Shadow Man and it's Andy Diggle, so I trust him. So, you know, I read it. And then I have to say, once I got to this last page and I saw this image, I just got really, really excited. Because Shadow Man's been a character I've been a fan of since the 90s, and we've never gotten a real definitive understanding of where, the origins of the Loa, like, where did it first come? Who was the first Shadow Man? And so as Jesse was saying, when we were talking about issue 5, this really is like a definitive origin for the character. And what's great about it also is the fact that, once again, as I mentioned before, Diggle is not throwing out anything that came before. You know, the first third of this issue, we got the Abettors, we got Alyssa, we got the Brethren, we got Dr. Mirage showing up, which I think she's a great character. I always enjoy seeing her show up in books. So all in all, a really, really strong issue, and it had me very excited for issue 7. What were your thoughts on 6, Jesse?
I was very, first of all, I love the artwork. You know, and don't get me wrong, I like Braithwaite's artwork a lot. I'm a big fan. I like it has a very, very high quality comic book look. This is more photorealistic, but I mean, I got to be honest. I don't think I've seen Renato's art look bad yet, really. I mean, he is a heavily talented artist. And if it's compiled in a trade paperback or, you know, a larger origin, you know, compilation or something, this is something that, you know, 20 or 30 years from now will still look good. It's going to age well because the quality of the artwork will age well. And of course, it's, I think, a very interesting story. I mean, let's be honest here. If in the Valiant universe is, you know, a huge amount of the origin stories can be traced back to Mesopotamia. About 10,000 years ago with the, with Gilad and Ivar and them. And this way predates that. I mean, like by a good 30,000 years. So that means that the origin of Shadow Man may actually be one of the oldest origins so far, in the Valiant universe that we've encountered. I don't know how far back XO's, Shannara suit goes. I'd have to go look back at some of those, issues, and, you know, whatnot. But even that, I mean, that was off world. So, at least from an Earth perspective, it looks like Shadow Man might have the gold medal on oldest origin story told so far. Which is interesting in its own right, because that means there's 40,000 years at a minimum of, stories that can be told. And we haven't really even begun to tap into, you know, a true understanding of those powers and abilities. I mean, we've seen him pick up things and hit people and stuff. But, all in all, I was very, you know, when I sat down and had my coffee and was reading this, I was like, you know what? This is, this needs to be on the short list of things I recommend people reading, when they come, newcomers to the Zion universe that are interested in the character, because it doesn't take a whole lot of it. Like I said earlier, a whole lot of, previous knowledge to get into, and is just enough to spark some interest. You know, you could read issues 7 and 8 or issues 6, 7, and 8. You could read these issues and then go back and actually start the entire thing from day one and still be interested. You know, I thought it was very well done as a whole.
Yeah, I think the only thing, you know, if you started reading with issue 4, where he first falls back in time and to his great grandfather, the only thing that you might be confused about is the early part of this issue 6, where you might wonder who are the abettors and who are the brethren. They give a little context in their exchange, but that might be the one part where you're like, oh, I'm not really sure. But other than that, this is all like new material, even for longtime Shadow Man fans. So yeah, there's nothing here that would preclude anybody from jumping on. And you really are getting in on the ground floor of Shadow Man, so to speak. So let's move on to issue 7 here. Andy Diggle is the writer on this issue. The art continues to be by Renato Guedes, letters by Simon Boland. So as I said, and I will agree with you on the art for issue 6. And what's interesting, I wonder, so Renato Guedes, just to give you guys a little background, he pencils and he also paints. And what's interesting is he's actually faster when he does the full digital painting than when he does the pencils, which I find really interesting because his painting seems to have so much more detail in it. So I find that interesting. And so the art in issue 6 was done really well. The art in issue 7, it's a little looser, I would say. Which, and I found it to be a little more, I don't want to say beautiful, that's not the right word, but it's just, it's a little more textured. And I found it to suit the story even better than issue 6. And that's not to say that the art in issue 6 is bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I just feel like he really took it to the next level in issue 7. And it's a really spectacular, it evokes even more emotion into the story and kind of injects emotion into the story than issue 6 did. So, you know, I mentioned at the end of last issue that scene with Standing Wolf finding the kind of the icon of Shadow Man. He continues deeper in the cave and meets the Keeper of the Dead who's been there waiting. And Jack himself, who's along for the ride, obviously said, something that's always been there waiting for us, a power that's much older than he realized, but now that he senses it, he realizes that it was always there. And so as he walks into the Keeper of the Dead, she remarks that, I've seen you've learned the secret of fire, but I have so much more to teach you. But Standing Wolf says, you know, I'm not really here for knowledge. I'm here for vengeance. A sorcerer ate the souls of my tribe. You're the Keeper of the Dead. You have strong magic. Give it to me. And she says, you know, I've seen this soul taker in my dreams, and he uses the dead to feed his own dark magic and bind Aloa to his will. And Standing Wolf says, Loa? What's Loa, right? And so she explains, well, they're spirits. They're intermediaries between our world and the root of all creation. But there's discord in the spirit world, and sometimes some of these spirits are cast out. A wild Loa, an angry shadow who would not bend to the will of this pantheon. So now these spirits that are cast out, they walk their own path. And this one specifically that she's referring to, she names it. So again, we see this name, Bosu Koblamin, I'll say, is how you pronounce it. I'm not sure if that's correct. But she says that this spirit walks its own path. It could be the greatest of them. And that is also part of why they fear Bosa. He's not willing to follow their rules, their guidelines. He wants to be independent. And so Standing Wolf says, hey, sounds good to me. Bring me the Shadow Loa. Bind it to me. Make me powerful so I can kill my enemies. And this is so great that Diggle is taking everything that's come before and explaining to us why Jax had such a hard time, right? Why he's been filled with anger, why he hasn't been able to sometimes access the Loa, why he's been fighting with it. Because the Keeper of the Dead says, no, to bind a Loa is to bind its strength. And that's actually the Soul Taker's weakness. And Standing Wolf says, well, I didn't see any weakness in him. And the Keeper of the Dead continues, instead, you must act together as hunters to bring down the larger prey. And this is something that Standing Wolf will understand, right? This is something that as a nomadic hunting tribe at this time in Africa would clearly understand. If when you're looking to take down a big target, the more of you there are working together, the better, right? But there's too much anger in Standing Wolf right now. He doesn't want to hear this, right? He says, my hunters are dead. Enough talk. Give me vengeance. Give me power. And so she tries to explain to him. She says, your anger is fire, and left unchecked, it will consume you and all around you, just as fire consumed your village. Again, it's to me so clear that not only is she speaking to Standing Wolf as this information pertains to him and what's going on in his life with wanting revenge over the soul taker, she's also speaking to Jack, right? This is his problem. This is the trouble that he's been having and that's brought him to unhappiness and failure. And she continues, let anger be your strength that pulls the bowstring, draw it close, hold it tight against you, and let your actions be the arrow. Wild fury is of no use. You need to be precise with your intent. Respect the Loa and earn his respect in return. Move as one with a common purpose. You will have power that none may overcome, which I think is just so awesome to think about that idea of Jack working in concert with the Loa, because then it means he's going to be more powerful, because Shadow Man in my mind should be one of the most powerful characters in the Valiant universe. And we haven't really seen that borne out over time. So Standing Wolf finally, it seems like the Keeper here has finally got through to him and said, tell me how to do this thing. Tell me what you need. She says a pig. So he goes, he finds a pig. He actually sees a slow hippo there as well, saying, show yourself. I heard you following me halfway down the mountain. And a slow hippo says, I feared you were dead, never to return. What did you find in the cave? And he says, the cave is just a cave, my friend. Come and join me. The Keeper will not harm you. So he's like, well, what about the pig is an offer for the spirits? He says, I think the pig is more for the Keeper than the spirits, but I'll play her game. Even a shaman needs to eat. She's already shared secret knowledge with me. If you put a pig close to the fire, it becomes hot and crisp and its might increases tenfold. So again, they've never eaten cooked meat. They didn't have fire before. So it's so interesting. Diggle's not just telling a great story, but he's pulling in like actual historical factual roots here to the story. So back in the cave, the keeper does her spells, does her rituals, gives Standing Wolf the mark of Boso Koblamine, his three horns, strength, wildness, and violence. And he's bound to Standing Wolf. And he says, I am spirit, I am flesh. Bosu Koblamin, Standing Wolf, Shadow Man. And it's a great, great looking scene, wonderfully depicted from Renato. It's really impactful. So, meanwhile, toward the setting sun, we see the Soul Taker and his tribe, continuing on their journey, I suppose you'd say. And Slow Hippo catches up and starts calling them, actually he yells pig, and they think he's calling me a pig, but he's actually trying to share his knowledge here, right? Pig, flesh, and fire, put them together. The pig flesh becomes hot and crispy and oh so tasty. And Soul Taker's like, what? You followed us? And Soul Hippo's like, yeah, you killed my tribe. Where else would I go? And he says, oh, you've come to join them. And, your flesh will soon feed my warriors for days. So although the Soul Taker was willing to offer Standing Wolf a place in his pack, not so for Slow Hippo. I suppose he's not, formidable enough. So come to find out though, Slow Hippo is just a distraction. And he even says, I bring you a message, free the innocent souls you've taken or the darkness will come for you. And Soul Taker's like, I have fire and strong magic. The very sun flees before me. Like, what do I have to fear? And Soul Hippo says, you cannot escape your own shadows. They're hungry. And as he says that, the other members of the pack see their shadows start to move and look like Shadow Man. And they're pulled down into the earth, into their own shadows, screaming, help me, help me. And it happens to all of them, to a man. And the Soul Taker is angered. How have you done this? Who gave you this magic? And Soul Hippo says, I don't need magic. What I have is a friend. And the Soul Taker sees his own shadow start to resemble Shadow Man. And there's another great panel by Renato Guedes here that shows the panic that the Soul Taker feels at this moment. And he flings Slow Hippo down at his own shadow. And then we see Standing Wolf, Shadow Man appear. And right away, the Soul Taker knows. He says, so Hunter, you've bound Alola of your own. And Standing Wolf says, bound? No, we do not bind. We break such bindings. Because again, when you bind Alola, you're binding its strength. So he easily overcomes the Soul Taker because, again, the Soul Taker has bound his Loa. And in that way, he has bound its strength. So Shadow Man defeats him relatively easily and actually pulls the Soul Taker out of the Loa that it's bound to. And the Loa says, I am unbound, Bosu Kabalin, and for that I owe you thanks. Perhaps we of the Pantheon misjudged you. And Bosa doesn't want to hear it, though. He says, I go where I will and I do what I please. I seek neither your approval nor your judgment. So it's great. I love that Diggle is really giving Bosa his own voice here, something that we've never really seen before. So I like that. And he goes on to say, now's the time for, but speak truly now. Is there vengeance in your heart? For this one's soul is forfeit if you wish it. And I don't know that we ever find out this Loa's name that was bound to the Soul Taker, but he does say this one has abused the great powers and for that there must be consequences. And this former Soul Taker says, please don't kill me. And the Loa says, I need not kill you, for the span of your life is a wingbeat of an insect to one such as I, but your time in this world has ended and I shall be waiting in the world beyond to claim your soul. And so he thinks, the former Soul Taker thinks, I lived. I'll just find another Loa and I'll steal more souls and I'll conquer death itself and I'll never face the consequences. And Slow Hippo takes the opportunity to stab him in the back and says, no, you will not. And when he does that, all the souls from all the villagers, Slow Hippo's mother, father, his friends, they're all at peace now. And Sandy Wolf says, it's done. And so I leave this mortal form to guide the souls to the world beyond. If you ever have need of me, you may call upon me once again, Standing Wolf. So clearly there was a sense of teamwork among Bosa and Standing Wolf, which is something we've never seen with Jack and Bosa. So again, you have to think that Jack must have learned from this. And on the next page, the one part that Diggle couldn't make work, we have an explanation here. It's not completely fleshed out, but Jack does say, everything the abettors taught us was a lie. Marius Boniface wasn't the first. He was just the first to be bound against his will. How many more have there been over the years? How many times has the Loa taken a willing host? And together, what are they capable of? As the Loa depart, so do I. I'm falling again. No, not falling, rising, rushing up through the darkness, through the dead side, the dream side, and everything in between. Whatever hex Baron Samedi used to cast me out, it's run its course. And so Jack actually rises again. We find out that Dr. Mirage and Alyssa are still there with Jack's body in the coffin. And Dr. Mirage senses that the scythe is bursting with power. She doesn't know if she can hold it much longer. And Dr. Mirage worries what that might mean because the scythe itself explodes. And she says, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And meanwhile, Alyssa's yelling, Jack, Jack. And we see a voice from off panel say, hey, Alyssa, no need to shout. I'm right here. And Jack is back. So as they embrace, Alyssa tells him that she thought he was lost forever. And he says, hey, I said I'd find my way back to you. Didn't think a little thing like being dead would stop me, right? So Dr. Mirage is very happy that the two are back and they're together, and the three leave together. But there's somebody waiting in the alley. I imagine one of the brethren left there as a spy, just to be sure. Because when it comes to shadow men, when it comes to voodoo and magic, you're never quite sure if it's really over, right? Which is why the brethren showed up at the funeral in the first place. So this spy calls somebody and says, this is Unit 6, target sighted. Jack Boniface is alive. And indeed, we do see one of the brethren on the other end of the line saying, finally, we can begin. So this is the end of the story arc. Obviously, very anxious and curious to see where Diggle goes from here. As I said, he's really given us a great starting point. I feel like he's cleaned up the Shadow Man mythos, so to speak. Not that it was a huge mess, but it is nice that he's taken pretty much everything that's come before and incorporated it and made it work and made it make sense. And I can't wait to see the way Jack and the Loa interact in the future. Because obviously with the Loa being bound, we've seen that affects the strength and the capabilities of who's ever bound with it. And we did see that Marius was the first to be bound by Sandria Dark. And that has continued through Jack's lineage up to Jack. But clearly in the past with Standing Wolf and others probably in between, that's another great thing Diggle did, was establish the fact that there may be other stories in ancient times with the Loa working with willing hosts. There's a whole host of stories that can be told there. Jesse mentioned Ninja K, the same kind of thing, right? It's opening up a lot of story ideas and very rich playground for Diggle and subsequent writers to play in. But what happens, right? What happens now? Like, Jack is bound to the Loa, and that's clearly not the right way to do it. So is it a ritual to unbind and then work in tandem willingly with the Loa? Is it just making the choice to set the Loa free and then inviting the Loa back to work with Jack willingly? I mean, there's a lot of questions still to be answered. But again, I think Diggle's done a masterful job of, and I don't want to say fixing Shadow Man, because I don't want to say that everything that came before so far was wrong and broken and didn't work. There were some things that worked, but for the most part, it didn't seem to connect with readers. But I'll say Diggle's done a great job of adjusting and changing the story and bringing this new understanding and new ideas to the Shadow Man character and new understanding for Jack as the Shadow Man to now open up kind of a whole new era for Shadow Man. I can clearly see him becoming one of the most powerful characters in the Value universe. And if it's if it does connect with readers and they are great stories, it's going to give Valiant the opportunity to grow this kind of supernatural, mystical corner of the Valiant universe. And that can only enrich the universe overall. What do you think, Jesse?
Oh, yeah. Shadow Man has been underrated for a long time. He's essentially been a, a rageful knight character that is undefined power and limitations, and you know it can suit whoever the writer of the time is. And I like the idea that we're expanding what is possible, because let's be honest, much of the Valiant universe is expanding at the same time. You know, Ezra Minor War, his knowledge and abilities are expanding. Livewire is completely expanding our powers and abilities. And as this continues to happen, well, we can't leave Shadow Man behind, because he's a staple. He's one of the most well-known characters historically in the Valiant universe. And so, and he really needs to be a front and center character. He's got a long fan following, and I think they're doing him justice. They're doing him right. I am interested to see, as you alluded to, and what I already said, is there now that he knows what is possible? Because remember, you don't know what you don't know, and you can't be held accountable. But now he knows. He knows that he can work with the low. He knows that they can increase the power. Perhaps the darks bound him or his ancestors together in a way to use him, but limit him, to contain him. Maybe it was a necessary evil, or you put your dog on a leash, and now he may be able to unleash himself, and that may be exactly what is needed to tip the tide and in his mystical war, for in the future. There's a lot of things that can happen. There's a lot of directions this can go, and I'm excited to see where it goes. All together, I very much have liked this entire series, and I've mostly these last few issues, because it's got direction. It's interesting, and as you stated, I'm curious to see where it goes now, because there's a lot of places it can be. We've also seen them really double down on Baron Samedi. Baron Samedi over the last 18 months has popped up everywhere. And his name and his powers and his limitations and his intellect, how formidable he is as a villain, huge. The question that remains unanswered right now is, why in the outright hell didn't he allow Jack to go and see all this? What is the benefit? Because as you stated, he did him a favor, really. And Baron Samedi doesn't do anybody favors. So there's two ways this can go. One, it's writing error and they just wanted to tell a story, which I hope that's not the case. And two, there's more to come from Baron Samedi. Maybe he wanted Jack to learn how to master and work with Loa for a greater thing to come. Or maybe there's an advantage from Baron Samedi to defeat Jack and the Loa as a result of that knowledge and separation. Or maybe, who knows? But I want that answered, and I want to see it, and I'll be looking for it, because I have faith that Andy knows where he's going.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. I love that analogy that you said, about the darks binding the Loa. You put your dog on a leash. That's a perfect way to say it, right? Like, bind the Loa, can still take advantage of the Loa, knowing that by binding it, you're reducing the Loa's strength. So that maybe it doesn't ever become a threat to you yourself. So that goes kind of hand in hand with maybe one idea of what Samedi was doing here. Maybe Samedi is planning on taking on the darks. And he figures that, well, if I help Jack and the Loa out and help them to understand that there's a way for them to work together and be more powerful, then they'll be on my side in my war against the darks. And I can finally defeat Master Dark and Sandria Dark once and for all. Or the other possibility that I speculate, and again, this is all speculation, he may think that by showing Jack and the Loa that there is a way to work together and be more powerful and not be bound, that they'll choose to find a way to undo that binding. And then when they're separated, Samedi hopes to step in at that moment and prevent them from coming together as Willing Loa and our host and willing host and Loa. You know, he's hoping to step in at that moment because now that Jack knows that he's much better off as working with the Loa as a willing host, I gotta think he's gonna do whatever he can to transition to that rather than staying bound to the Loa. So if that is in fact the case, that might be exactly what maybe the Brethren are working for Samedi now as well. And that's exactly why they're what they expect to happen next, right? Like maybe they knew all along and they're going to try to step in that moment when Jack and the Loa are separated and keep them from joining as Loa and willing hosts. So, I mean, sky's the limit at this point. I love what Diggle's done here. He's opened up a great storyline going forward for Jack. And like I said, opened up a huge library of possibility for a former willing host and Loa going forward. So great job by Diggle. Great job by everybody at Valiant to get Andy to, you know, do this and give him the opportunity and give him the reins for Shadow Man. I think that the sky's the limit and yeah, really exciting time. And I don't know that Shadow Man would have necessarily worked the way it had previously been in this iteration of the Valiant universe as a TV show or a movie. It was too messy and they didn't really have a kind of a definitive understanding of who the character was and like how would that translate to the small screen or the big screen. But as you said earlier in the podcast, Jesse, I could completely see this origin story as like the first 20 minutes of a movie and then whatever else with Jack working together with the Loa going forward for the remaining, you know, hour and 20 minutes or whatever it would be for a film. So I'm really excited for the future of Shadow Man after this arc. All right. Is there anything else that we want to add about Shadow Man?
No, I think we've about covered it. Most other fans and readers, we just got to wait and see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. So kudos to everybody involved. Hopefully Jesse is going to be back next week to talk Harbinger Wars Aftermath. I think the issue comes out this Wednesday. So we'll be, I don't think we've talked about Harbinger Wars 2 number 4 yet, which there was a lot to unpack there. And then the Aftermath issue, I know a lot of you have been really asking for us to talk about that. So it's coming soon. Don't worry. I want to let everybody know that we haven't forgotten about Harbinger Wars 2. And I think Jesse even mentioned the big change in Livewire and where she goes from here is going to be really interesting to see as well now that she has her own series coming up in a few short months. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. Twitter.com/ The Comic Source is where we can be found on Twitter. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'll be at is New York Comic Con in a couple of weeks. So if you're going to be there, be sure and let me know. Always love to meet up with listeners, and I'll even hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.